Welcome to Newsworthy with Norrisworthy. Get ready for some awesome.
Welcome back to the show, friends. Today we have something real special for you. Joining me from the great state of Massachusetts, former NBA basketball player Chris Herron comes on the show. If you don't know his story, it's a story that was well chronicled by ESPN in their 30 for 30 series, and one based on his life entitled Unguarded, in which we find the story of one Chris Herron, young man, grows up Fall River, Massachusetts, becomes a basketball prodigy. He's on the cover of Sports Illustrated as an 18-year-old college freshman playing at Boston College. He ends up making it to his hometown, Boston Celtics. But along the way, he's developed a serious drug problem, which leads to the end of his career, almost leads to the end of his family and his own life. But the story does not end there. It's a story of redemption, of hope, and overcoming. And it's that story that he now travels around the country telling. And so Chris Herron has taken this awful addiction that he has and used it to be an encouragement to a lot of people. And so we're going to talk about addiction, overcoming that, shame, forgiveness, and a lot of other stuff that I think you're going to find really encouraging. So without further ado, here is Chris Herron.
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Let's just jump right into this, all right?
Yep.
Your TED Talk back in May of last year, you have this really interesting story you tell about being at a school, and a girl stands up in the front row. She says, "We appreciate you validating what we do," and you ask what they do, and she says, "Well, you know, me and my friends wear this purple shirt, and we're the sober kids." And then as kids do, they laugh at her, they mock her, and then you look at the crowd who's been laughing at this poor girl, and you have this great line. You say, "I wish I liked myself enough. I wish I never had to change myself." You go on to say, "I'd give you every uniform I've ever worn to wear that purple shirt," which is an amazing story. I mean, it's a great line. But it doesn't make sense for many people who know your story to think about you as a high schooler, the celebrity, the big-time athlete, really needing to change yourself.
What high schooler is really qualified to handle celebrity status? I think sometimes we overlook the pressure, the responsibility, the results that are placed on our children based on performance. I mean,
yeah.
I think it's overwhelming. I don't think many kids handle it well. And I kind of push back at a young age. I often give the example, for instance, you know, you're in radio, and, you know, if your boss stood over your shoulder and critiqued you for 40 years straight with a notepad, it's a stressful environment, it's a stressful mm-hmm. work environment. So what do kids do that are being recruited, you know, from 14 to 18? How do they process that stress?
The Project Purple, which is born out of that story, you talk mm-hmm. about the importance of raising self-worth and self-esteem. So it doesn't matter if the kid is on the high end, making the front page of Sports Illustrated or the newspaper, or on the bottom end of that, you think still the big issue is dealing with self-worth and self-esteem?
I do. I think that's where it all begins.
Really?
I mean, when I ask the question to kids, how come on Fridays and Saturday nights you have to change yourself, you can see them get deep into thought. You know, you can see that the ones who are willing to look within know that, gosh, you know, if life is so good and, you know, I am really confident with myself, then why am I getting wasted and why do I have to change who I am?
Yeah. You had this really poignant moment in the 30 for 30 documentary, and what you talk about after many years of always brushing your teeth and shaving in the shower because you can't look at yourself in the mirror, something clicks and you can finally look at yourself in a mirror long enough where you can brush your teeth and shave in front of a mirror. What do you think it was that really made that moment switch in your mind where you could do that?
I just think it was, you know, it was a process of self-reflection and allowing others to hear what I was holding in. I think, you know, addiction is a very personal journey, and it's very lonely. And a lot of things happen along the way that you're not proud of. And I think once you're able to get free yourself of that, I think then you can start growing as a person. And I think that was part of it. I think allowing myself to forgive myself and you know, telling others I was sorry and moving forward was part of the growth that allowed me to get in front of the mirror.
Yeah, that's great. Was there anything in particular that helped you learn to forgive yourself?
You know, I think my faith in God is number one, and that was, you know, who am I not to forgive myself? Mm-hmm. But my concern was that others wouldn't forgive me. But you know, you're taught that, you know, make the amends, and if it's accepted, you know, it's accepted. If it isn't, you know, you made your best effort. And I did that along the way. And once I was able to kind of get those skeletons basically out of the closet, is when I was able to kind of move forward and grow as a person.
Yeah. Did you receive the forgiveness from the people closest to you that you were hoping to receive? Was that something that most of the people were able to give to you?
Yeah, of course I have. You know, it comes in time, you know, not everybody forgives at the same speed. Mm-hmm. You know, some were affected more than others by some of my decisions and it took some time. But you know, that's a process and I was ready and willing to accept that process that it was going to take time and it has. And after, you know, 6 years, it's been an amazing journey, an amazing process where I believe most have been able to forgive me.
As I hear you tell your story in other formats, it sounds like you have great people around you. Your wife, obviously, as you've said elsewhere, is the hero of the story. You talk about people like Chris Mullins, the NBA Hall of Famer, got you to rehab. A lot of really great people who surrounded you, but there's also some other people that not just encouraged, but pushed you down kind of wrong directions. And some people on the outside probably look at your story and go, well, why do you go back to hanging around some of these people that are just encouraging and enabling you to make these terrible decisions? What is it that's so hard for people on the outside to understand that draws you back into maybe some dysfunctional friendships, say like after your rookie year when you go back and try OxyContin for the first time?
You know, because I mean, at 22 years old, I was still untreated. You know, I had never addressed the issue. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't I be drawn back to negativity?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, today I surround myself with people in recovery. Why? Because that's what I want in my life. But, you know, back then it was very, you know, at 22 years old trying to process everything, I was drawn towards the negativity. And, you know, I was negative. You know, I remember my parents and people saying, you know, you shouldn't hang out with those kids. And I would say to myself as I was walking out of my house, you know, their parents should be saying they shouldn't be hanging out with me. Mm-hmm. You know, so I can't place blame. I just wasn't ready to surround myself with people who, you know, not wanted the best for me, but wanted the best for themselves.
Hmm. What do you think it is about certain people at that young age who do want the best for themselves? Is there something you see as a pattern that reoccurs between people who are wanting the best for themselves and others who are just making destructive choices?
You know, I always envied them as a kid. You know, sometimes they're looked upon as the weird kids or, you know, squares and don't know how to have fun. But in my heart and in my head, I knew there was something special. I was always envious and curious as to why they were able to just be themselves. So
I'm assuming people who have heard you say that, maybe friends of yours, classmates that probably looked at you and go, I was envious of your talents, of your success, of what you could do in the basketball court, of the way that you were, you know, a celebrity and everyone wanted to be around you. Do you think that's a kind of a eye-opening experience for people to hear you say that to them?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I do. It's, I think those kids need to be validated. You know, I think they're kind of the muted group of high school because they're not out and expressing themselves in negative ways. Mm-hmm. So nobody really knows about them. But I think those kids need to be validated, and I think they need to be looked upon, you know, not as, you know, the kids who are weird, different. I think they need to be validated as the kids who have great courage and inner strength and willpower and, you know, self-work. As I just spoke to a group of kids today, and, you know, it's easy to follow. You know, it's easy for someone to say, let's go and jump in. It's hard to say, you know what, guys, I'm going to sit this one out. You guys go ahead. Yeah. You know, that's the hard decision.
Yeah, and I appreciate what you're doing, because obviously you have a platform in which you can really affirm the students who are, you know, wearing the proverbial purple shirt, who are saying, we're not going to do this. And so they don't get to sit at the cool table in the cafeteria, and you're affirming it. And I think that's a great thing that you're doing. But I can only imagine how painful it is to day in and day out tell this story of yours, which includes a lot of, as you described earlier, shame and embarrassment and choices that you're not proud of. Do you find this to be just exhausting, having to say over and over again the things that that you made mistakes with?
Yeah, I mean, it's terribly exhausting. But I also believe, you know, I also know how necessary it is, too. I wish more people were willing to come out and say, you know, I struggled mightily in my life at one point. Mm-hmm. And although I struggled, I was able to overcome. I think we need more people like that. There's days I speak 3 times a day, and, you know, and I tap into everything I possibly can to get it out. But to be honest, it's really not hard when you're looking at kids crying, you know. Last night I spoke, and I could see this woman brought her 19-year-old son, 20-year-old son, and they sat probably in the third row, and he kept falling asleep. And she was under the influence of Xanax or heroin or whatever. And she just cried the whole time as her son kept falling in and out of sleep. And it's hard not to get up when you see stuff like that.
I'm assuming you probably see a lot of positive stories as well. I mean, I'm assuming you get a lot of people who are saying that your story encouraged them and inspired them and helped them get clean. Do you get a lot of feedback like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I do it for both. You know, I do it for the people who I've helped, and I also do it, you know, for the people, you know, who are struggling. I mean, that's why I started doing this. You know, I want there to be more voices. You know, I want more people out there not ashamed to say that, you know, that they struggle.
Have you gotten a lot of response from, I would assume that the 30 for 30 documentary is probably the thing that puts you most on the forefront of probably the collective thought of people in America. Have you gotten a lot of positive feedback from that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a documentary that's shown in treatment centers nationwide, you know, and people who are walking into treatment are usually, that's part of their program, is watching that DVD. So, you know, that's the reason why I did the documentary. I mean, the whole purpose of the documentary was to touch, to inspire people struggling in their life with addiction or alcoholism. I mean, that was the purpose.
And obviously, it's done that. It's a great story that you were very vulnerable to share that part of your life with all of us. I wonder what it's like for your wife, because she was with you from just pretty much the beginning of it. And is it hard for her to hear the story? Does it bring up hard emotions and painful emotions in her life too?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's hard for me. It's hard for her. It's hard for our children. But we also know that behind it, there's a need for it. And yeah. You know, I think once we accept once we embrace the struggle, and once we're able to talk about the struggle, you know, the struggle is put behind. And, you know, I go home at night, my wife, my children, they know where we're at. They know where we stand. And there's something very comforting in that, you know. That doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, my wife, you know, all of our misfortune, all of our struggle was put on national TV. That it's not difficult sometimes. It is, but she understands it, and she's seen the positive that's come out of the documentary and the book and the speaking. So, you know, we're at peace with it.
Yeah. You talk about your struggle being on national TV. I heard you in an interview at UMass Law School, and you said if something causes too much stress and is becoming too difficult, you should remove yourself from it. And you're talking about kids. It almost sounded like you were even including basketball in that.
Absolutely.
Would you have gone back and not played basketball, knowing what it would cause in your life?
Absolutely. I would have been condemned on myself and said, yes, stepping away from this for a little while. Until you really take a long look at it and see if it's worth it. You know, if anything in life is detrimental, I mean, how worth it is it? You know? So, I think, you know, you have to have a passion and you have to love what you're doing. And, you know, that's what I'm all about. I mean, my children won't play a sport if they're not smiling. I mean, it's not going to happen.
You live just down the road from Cambridge, which there's a professor who used to be at Harvard named Henry Nouwen, and he had this great line about, he was a Catholic priest, and he talked about being a wounded healer, like the way that you heal people is out of your own wounds. And you seem to embody that as well as anyone who's really in the public eye right now, is that it's out of your wounding that you're healing people. Is it just the encouragement of seeing lives change? Is that what keeps you doing what has to be a really painful job of telling this heartbreaking story?
Yeah. I mean, I think being vulnerable, being transparent, being open and honest in front of people. I think that is what inspires others to share their struggle and say, you know, like, wow, if he can do it, I can do it. If he went through that and I've gone through this, then, you know, I can come through as well. I think that's the power behind it. But, you know, being a public speaker has been a learning process for me. And, you know, once I made it more about the people I was speaking to and less about me, that's when I really felt like I was making a connection.
Is there anything that helped you do that, to make it less about you and more about the people you're talking to?
You know, it was just a learning curve that I was on. And you know, I didn't feel the connection walking up and telling my story for an hour and then walking out. Mm-hmm. I had to tie the audience in and I had to question kids and I had to, you know, put some ownership on the audience onto where they're at with their life. And I think that's when the feedback started coming in, and that's when school systems started saying, like, gosh, those are, you know, maybe we should be asking some of those questions.
Yeah, that's good. Well, Chris, thank you so much for your time. It's been great talking with you. I love what you're doing, and keep up the good work, sir.
Thank you so much. I'll talk to you.
Thanks for checking out Newsworthy with Norsworthy. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You are now adjourned.